I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moskowane. When is a child old enough to have their own cell phone, or sign up for Facebook, to go on a date, to get the keys to the car? Deciding these answers to these questions is part and parcel of parenting an adolescent, and they don't always come easily. But there are some helpful guidelines for moms and dads who are trying to help their children navigate the choppy waters of adolescence without going overboard. Our guests are the authors of a soon-to-be-published book called Letting Go with Love and Confidence, Raising Responsible, Resilient, Self-Sufficient Teens in the 21st Century. Dr. Kenneth Ginsberg is a leading adolescent medicine expert at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and even more importantly for our discussion, he is a dad. He's the father of twin daughters. Dr. Ginsberg, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you so much. Really glad to be here.
And Dr. Ginsberg's co-author is former Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Susan Fitzgerald, and Susan now teaches health writing at St. Joseph's University when she's not writing books. Susan is also the mother of three boys. Susan, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you for having us, Tracy.
Well, so Susan, tell me, how did you and Ken come to collaborate on this book?
Well, I had interviewed Ken back when I was a reporter at the Philadelphia Inquirer, and we sort of think alike, and we got together on this idea. And what we wanted to do was write a book about the everyday moments of parenting, because we think it's really these everyday decisions around cell phones, going to the mall, that really challenge parents.
And Ken, you, both of you really had real-life experience with this, as we just pointed out. You've got five children between you.
Sure. Having children is the hardest job in the planet, right? And it's also the most important job on the planet. But there's no easy recipe for parenting. And that's one of the reasons that we not only kind of, what this book is about is it's about applying the lessons of resilience, and then it's about listening to the wisdom of other parents, because there are lots of other parents included in this book.
Well, speaking of that, Susan, how many parents did you interview, and how did you find them?
Well, I interviewed close to 60 parents for the book, in-depth conversations, and really kind of just, this person led me to this person, friends of family. It's not a scientific sample, really just ordinary people. And talking with parents, I'd say three themes really emerged. One is parents are really worried that their kids are growing up too fast, the childhood is ending too soon. I'd say the second common theme that emerged was parents are very worried about the presence of technology in their kids' lives. And I'd say the third universal theme that emerged in the interviews was that parents know their kids are on a treadmill, you know, doing loads and loads of activities and academics, but they're kind of worried if they pull back that their children may not be prepared for a world that's very competitive, and certainly with the economic downturn, I think parents worry more and more about that.
Yeah, so just trying to find that sense of balance for them is difficult, it sounds like. What kinds of questions, Susan, did you ask in the course of these interviews?
Well, I focused a lot on, we decided to structure the book into three categories. The first is a really overall theme of child development, understanding your child's temperament, personality. We looked at safety, different issues like that. The second section of the book is divided into whens. So we came up with a number of whens that every parent deals with. And then the third is how to talk about the really tough stuff. So I approach parents like parents are always the best experts on parenting. So I was really looking for them to share with me stories, creative strategies they came up with, some of the challenges they had. So that I felt like our conversations with the parents were really very like you would be sitting talking to somebody down the street. That's the tone I was hoping to strike with the parents.
And Ken, these are the kinds of questions that parents really are grappling with, especially as it relates to technology, as Susan pointed out. You know, when is it okay for your child to have a Facebook account? When is it okay for them to have a cell phone? And these are questions that I think all parents are grappling with that our own parents did not have to deal with.
Absolutely. Take cell phones, for example. You know, if you're going to look at this book and hope that I'm going to say, at 12 and a half, That's not going to happen. Susan and I don't think it should be exactly 12 and a half, and all of these other parents gave all of this wisdom that always looked at their individual child. So there's not an age. What there is a strategy, an approach to thinking about when my child is ready for something. And with cell phones in particular, it's a very interesting question. Because once your child enters the world of cell phones, they stop talking with their mouth. And they begin talking with their fingers.
I know that's right.
And that's just the truth. And that's the problem. So when is my child ready to talk, to get a cell phone? It's when I think that they are ready to change the way they communicate, which means that before that happens, I have to make sure they can look someone in the eye, grasp their hand, and just have a normal conversation with them. Because when they get into the work world and when they go into school, you can't be texting your teacher and texting your boss.
Yeah. So you've really got to be a student of your own child, and even within a family. I mean, you've got different dynamics and different personalities.
Absolutely. We recommend a kind of a five-step process to go through, not a recipe. But, you know, Tracy, what you said is be a student of yourself, of your child. That's the first step, is to observe. We don't know what it means for our children not only to navigate cell phones, but even to navigate sexuality in 2011. So the first thing we need to do is we need to observe. Just like if you were baby-proofing your house for a two-year-old, ideally you got down on your knees. You got down on your knees to say, what does the world look like from my child's point of view? So that's the first step. Do you want to hear the others?
Absolutely.
The second thing is you really think, what is my child's unique developmental needs? And that's why the first third of the book is basically a comprehensive summary of everything out there on adolescent development so that I can think about my child's temperament and their developmental needs. Third, you listen to your child. You listen to your child really respectfully, and you work with the assumption that she, and you ask her what guidance or support she's seeking, because fourth is you're going to invite her to develop a plan with you. And you've got to approach this conversation with the attitude that she might be young, but she's the greatest expert on herself. And then fifth, as a team, you generate a roadmap so that you break big challenges, you know, getting a cell phone, dating. There's so many different challenges in life. You break these mountains into their hills so that you can create a strategy so your child will really succeed. They will gain independence one step at a time under your watchful eye. And if you take this approach where you're collaborating and partnering with your child so that they will help develop a plan for success, they're going to know something. They're going to know that your goal is for them to become independent. And when they know that's your goal, that's what I call rebellion prevention. They don't need to push you away if you're on their side.
Yeah. Susan, as I'm listening to what Ken is saying, I'm thinking that there have to be some parents who are listening to this who have maybe teens who are 15, 16 and saying, can I still do that? Is there a point at which it's too late for me to, you know, invite them to develop a plan and to sort of take the teamwork approach to this? What do you say to that?
I think it's never too late. And I think particularly with what Ken just said about learning to be a good listener, if you're the kind of parent who jumps in, cuts your kid off, sounds your parent alarm, tells them what you think they should be thinking, you can train yourself to pull back, to listen, to instead of giving your opinion immediately, to say, well, tell me more about that. So absolutely. And many of the whens we're talking about really do happen at this critical moment in adolescence, 15, 16. So we have topics like getting a job, driving, stretching a curfew, learning to manage the healthcare system on your own. So this book, we think ideally parents of 8 to 9-year-olds, this is a perfect book for them to start laying the groundwork, to start doing the observing that Ken talked about. Go to the mall, just look at it, see what's going on. But absolutely, the topics are very, very relevant to parents of older teenagers.
Ken, you talk about resiliency in this book, and I'd like you to first define what resiliency should look like. And then maybe the two of you can help us unpack some of the seven C's of resiliency that you talk about in the book. But first, how do you define it?
Yeah, so resilience is usually defined as the ability to overcome problems, the ability to deal with adversity and rise above it. When someone's trying to push you down, you can still make it. But I think in pediatrics, I developed the 7 C's model for the Academy of Pediatrics, and pediatrics, we think not just about overcoming difficulty, we think about what are the ingredients a human being needs to have in place to thrive. So this is not only prevention of problems and dealing with problems, it's really about positive youth development as well. That's really our goal. Our goal is for our kids to be able to confront life, to bounce, and to still succeed. And what the 7 C's is a model that's borrowed largely from the youth development model, but that's tweaked a bit, that really looks at what are the factors that we have to put into place in a kid's life to make them thrive. And we'll start with confidence, because a kid's not going to take the chances you need to be successful in life if you don't have confidence. That's your first C. But where does confidence come from? It doesn't come from parents just praising you and telling you how wonderful you are to build your self-esteem. In fact, we know that that can backfire, and that's very explained in the book. Real confidence comes from competence. It comes from knowing and recognizing your skills and building on those skills.
Hmm. Well, and let's park there for a moment, Ken, because you made an interesting point that, you know, a parent might think, well, if I really, you know, praise the child and encourage them, even if their efforts maybe are not so great, but just to sort of, that would build their confidence. And you're saying not necessarily, that there are other ways to do that.
Yeah, you actually want to be very direct with praise, and you want to be accurate with praise. What should be effusive is your love for your child. Your unconditional love and support for your child is probably the single most important thing that's going to make them okay. But what we know from research, really well-done research, that if you praise a child and you call them so smart, you're so bright, you're so special, it actually freezes them. They're more likely to become perfectionistic. They're going to fear the B+ because they're told how smart they are all the time, and they actually don't perform as well. The kids who perform better are the kids who are praised for their effort. Their effort is noticed. And what we praise is the process of trying rather than the outcome. The simplest example is not how'd you do on your test, but what'd you learn today?
So it's a different kind of question maybe that we need to be asking. And I guess helping them to figure out what those strengths are.
Absolutely. People are uneven. You know, Susan talked earlier about how we are, our kids are kind of overscheduled. And kids nowadays are thinking that in order to be successful, they have to be good at absolutely everything. No one is good at absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. And what childhood and adolescence should be about is figuring out what your strengths are, what your limitations are, what makes your heart sing, so that you can really, really make a big contribution to the world. And we as parents, rather than pushing our kids to say, I expect straight A's in everything, what you expect is a really good effort. Mm-hmm. And then you expect for your child to learn what that effort produced.
Ken, I'm going to stop you right there because we need to take a quick break. We welcome your calls, your stories about your adolescence, your questions for our guests at 888-477-9499. Radio Times will be back right after this.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY and recognizes Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Prostate cancer is second only to skin cancer among U.S. men. African-American men and men with a family history of prostate cancer are at increased risk. Fox Chase's Prostate Cancer Risk Assessment Service helps you make informed decisions about risk and prevention. It all begins with a detailed analysis of your family medical history. More at foxchase.org.
Okay.
Fox Chase, hearts plus minds.
This evening, it's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's address before a joint session of Congress. Mr. Obama will talk about the economy and his jobs creation plan. Join Michelle Norris for in-depth coverage and analysis. That's an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's address before a joint session of Congress.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing, storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine. Weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM, or listen online at whyy.org and newsworks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow NewsWorks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
Welcome back to Radio Times. We are talking about adolescence and help for parents who are trying to get their children through those stages and figure out some of the important when questions. When should they get a cell phone? When should they have a Facebook? When can they date? When can they learn to drive? When can they get the keys to the car? The kinds of things that many a parent struggles with, figuring out when that right moment comes for their particular child. We're talking about a book called Letting Go with Love and Confidence, Raising Responsible, Resilient, Self-Sufficient Teens in the 21st Century. The authors are with us on Radio Times. We're talking with Ken Ginsberg, who is a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. He's also the author of Building Resilience in Children and Teens. His co-author is Susan Fitzgerald, who is a journalist who specializes in medicine and children's health issues. She is a former Philadelphia Inquirer staff writer and editor, and she teaches health writing now at St. Joseph's University. And when we left off, Susan and Ken, we were talking about the seven C's of resilience. And I want to invite our listeners to join us in the conversation because they may have questions as they're figuring out how to navigate some of these things with their own children. Maybe some are sending, have just sent children off to college in the last few weeks, and that's a whole other thing that we might want to talk about. But if you'd like to join our conversation, it's 888-477-9499. We are talking about the book Letting Go with Love and Confidence. So we left off, we're talking about the seven C's, and Ken, you started off with confidence and said that's really critical in terms of helping the child figure out, you know, where their strengths are, playing to those strengths, and not just, you know, praising their every move or praising things in such a way that you end up putting extra pressure on them.
Absolutely. How we talk to our kids is we're giving them information about what they should deliver. And when we expect perfection, they freeze and they become anxious. Mm-hmm. When we expect effort and praise their ability to figure out who they are based on putting effort into everything and then sitting back and thinking, huh, what did I accomplish? This came easily to me and it really excited me. This might be the right career for me. Mm-hmm. This really excited me. I worked really hard, but I'm not very good at it, but I sure do love learning it. That might be their hobby. There's data to performance when we praise in the right way and expect the right things.
And can you mention competence as part of the discussion on confidence? That's another one of the C's. Susan, what do we need to know about developing competence in our children?
Well, I think this is where we talked about taking a step-by-step approach. So many of the wins that confront parents in the teenage years, they actually begin much earlier. So let's talk about managing money. Kids arrive at college, and all of a sudden they're getting bombarded with credit card offers, and they have a debit card for the first time. We're really talking about you can start building money competence at a very young age. You can have kids have an allowance that they manage. You can start introducing them to the concept of online, you know, bill paying. Have your child have a set amount of money they're allowed to spend on vacation and let them decide how to spend it. Hmm. So I think competence is really starting early, taking little steps. I mean, you don't become a good driver the day you get your license. You become a good driver because for years earlier, you heard your parents say, this is a dangerous intersection, or they see you turn off your cell phone while you're driving. Hmm. So competence is slowly acquired through watching other people and having your parents give you little responsibilities a bit at a time.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's building independence one step at a time. It's also equipping kids with the skills to navigate their environment. Because what the book also covers is how to talk to your kids about things like sex and drugs and peer pressure. Well, you know, what we want to do, if we want to build kids' competence, one of the major things we need to do is teach them how to cope with life when it gets stressful. You know, so coping skills are an incredibly important competence builder that will really prevent your kids from reaching for those easy, quick fixes that we don't want them to have. And also, when we tell kids how to do the right thing and say this to your friends, or you should do this with your friends, they're out in the real world. But if we help them acquire the skills to be able to navigate the peer world, they're much more likely to be able to follow their own instincts.
We're going to go to the phones in a minute, but I would like to get through at least one more of these C's, and then we'll get to the phones and we'll come back to a few more of them. Ken, connection is another important one.
Connection is the bottom line, because what is it that allows you to be able to thrive? It's that you know that someone has your back. All the research on resilience, if you summarize the last 50 years of research, it comes down to this. A person who's going to make it even when times are difficult is a person who has an adult who believes in them unconditionally and holds them to high expectations. Unconditional belief meaning I'm not going anywhere. My love for you is not dependent on your performance or what you do. I'm there. High expectations isn't straight A's. It certainly is effort, but it's more like I know who you are inside. You're the little girl who made me use a flashlight to bring a moth outside rather than catch it because you wanted to live with its moth grandmas rather than die in the house. That's how good you are. So we believe in kids unconditionally, hold them to high expectations, and we give that unwavering connection that gives kids confidence to be able to deal with life.
And yet, Susan, that can be a challenge for some parents and some children. If you have a child whose personality is one that they're maybe just difficult to connect with, or you've got a child who seems to connect well with friends, but not so much with parents, at least at a certain point in their teenage years. Have you experienced that or talked with parents about that? And what would you recommend for parents maybe who have a child who's a little difficult to connect with?
Well, I think what Ken said about you need a person or several people who believe in you unconditionally. Sometimes during the teen years, your kid doesn't seem to think you're so great, but loves their friend's best friend, their friend's dad. So there can be other adults that really play an important role in your kid's lives. I am a firm believer of, you know, taking your kid out to dinner. You know, put it in your budget that the two of you go out to dinner once in a while. Sometimes when you just get away from the house, you get away from the dishwasher, you get away from the phone, there's just that hour spent over, you know, eating that seems to be a really special moment. So I think parents need to create times sometimes where you're just removed from all those everyday things. But it doesn't have to be an entire day. It can just be, let's go get a pizza.
Yeah.
Tracy, you brought up such an important point, which is sometimes it's really hard to parent an adolescent because sometimes the adolescents will do absolutely anything possible to push you away, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing you have to remember is that usually the reason that they're pushing you away is because of how uncomfortable they are with how intensely they love you. It's really scary to know you have a few years to become independent. And so as a result, they just have to convince themselves that they want to fly from this nest because it's so uncomfortable. So that's something parents really need to hear. I've worked with thousands and thousands of parents of adolescents, and it is really an uncomfortable moment. But when they understand that a lot of this discomfort is absolutely temporary and is just about becoming independent, and that it really is about how close they feel to you, they take deep breaths and they feel better about their relationships. And the point that Susan made about taking kind of instant vacations, you got to give your, when you're at home and you're spending all of your time fighting or nagging or arguing, you have an unpleasant relationship. When you get out of the home and create this little instant vacation where it's a nag-free zone, you're not allowed to talk about school and problems. It gives you an opportunity to fall back in love with who your child is.
Great advice. We're going to go to the phones. I want to come back to some more of these seven C's, but let's go to East Windsor, and we'll bring Deborah in on our conversation with a question for you all. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. I'm finding this very interesting. I have a 14-year-old, and we have given her the privilege of having an iPod Touch, and she sometimes likes to abuse that privilege by having it at times that are not in the parameter that we set for her and things like that. And I found that taking it away does not prove very fruitful for anybody. And I'm wondering what you guys feel about punishments for privileges that you set up with your child that they abuse.
It's a very, very interesting question, and we start by you used a very good word, which is privileges. These are not things you must have to survive. These are privileges. And how do you earn privileges? You earn privileges with responsible behavior. What does the word discipline mean? The word discipline means to teach. It does not mean to punish. It does not mean to harm. It means to teach. And when we discipline our children in ways that they understand that the privileges that they have, the freedoms that they earn, are directly related to the responsibility they demonstrate, that's one of the most important things of building independence one step at a time. Kids are going to want to do the right thing. So actually, what I liked about what you did is that you made the punishment, and I don't like that word, but you made the consequence directly related to kind of the crime, which is she wasn't using the iPad correctly, and therefore she lost some privileges on it. That is actually a way for her to learn. If you had, and of course she's not going to like it, but she's going to also have to have the opportunity to earn back that privilege with responsible behavior. She has to know exactly what you expect for her to have the privilege. Had you instead grounded her for a week because you didn't like her iPad behavior, she never would have made the connection at 14. She would have felt like the punishment was worse than the crime. She would have felt like a victim, and you actually wouldn't have disciplined her. You wouldn't have taught her. You would have punished her.
You know, Ken, that's so important because it really forces parents to think in advance about what some of these consequences might be. I would think that, you know, in the heat of the moment, you're angry with the child and you want to say you're grounded for 3 months and you wind up doing more harm than good. So it sounds like it's important to kind of think these things through and know how you plan to respond before you get to that point.
That's
right?
Absolutely.
Tracy,
right.
Can I add something here? In our book, we think that cell phones really is one of those topics where you can establish a contract with the child in advance, but the contract has two sides to it. It's not just what you expect from your child, which is responsible behavior, no text bullying, turning your cell phone off at night, etc., but also how, as a parent, you will interface with their technology. And one of the dangers we write about is that the cell phone becomes a digital leash, where as a parent, we now have the opportunity to call our kid constantly mm-hmm. to say, are you okay? Are you okay? So part of the contract we propose in the book is that you establish what you will do. You will call your child in an emergency. You will respond to your child in such and such a way. So it gives the child sense that they have control over their cell phone if they act responsibly, and also that you recognize that they are becoming more independent and you trust them to behave responsibly.
And like all contracts, when they have two sides, both parties are happier. So, Tracy, you're absolutely right. If you punish after you've made a series of threats about something, when you make a threat, is it usually rational? I'm so angry at you that I'm going to come up with a completely fair consequence. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And so kids feel punished. If in advance a kid lays out, this is what I want, this is what I think I need, and a parent says, well, you know what, I'm willing to give you this, but these are the behaviors you're going to need to demonstrate to keep that privilege. It's going to allow you to open up all sorts of topics that are very difficult to open up during adolescence, and then it's really easy to have a consequence. Well, gosh, you got this privilege because you promised that this was going to happen,
yeah.
But it didn't happen. So naturally, we're going to withdraw this privilege to the point that you did demonstrate responsibility.
Hmm. Well, let's go next to Coatesville and bring Dr. Harris in on our conversation. Welcome, Dr. Harris.
Hello. How
Hi.
Are you?
Fine, thank you.
A great show today, great conversation. I love the comments about focus it on the child. What did he learn? My comment is the child has to deal with a competitive environment, getting into schools, colleges, etc. So how does the parent negotiate with the school system that is focusing on grades and how they're doing on their entrance exams and all those sort of things, as opposed to what a child is learning? So when does the parent go to the school and discuss with them they're interested in learning, and when does the school district have to come back and say, we're interested in grades, and how do you negotiate that? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Harris, this is an amazing question. Thank you for asking it. Unfortunately, there's not a clear-cut answer. What I will tell you is that we are focusing in the book very intensely, as well as in an organization I work for or I'm on the board of, which is called Challenge Success, about what really creates authentic success, and how does the treadmill that we are on right now harm kids' ability to achieve authentic success in school and in life? And what I will tell you, having spoken to scores of school districts and administrators around the country, is that the schools usually think it's the parents who are pushing too hard. The parents usually think it's the schools that are pushing too hard. And we are in a vicious cycle. We have to get off this treadmill together and look and say, what does it take to be authentically successful in the world, which I believe is being generous and being compassionate, being innovative, being creative, being hardworking, having tenacity, having the ability to deal with constructive feedback, and being resilient. That's what it takes. And what we have to have schools understand and parents understand and indeed colleges understand is that when we push our kids so hard and focus only on grades, then what happens is the kids begin defining their success in those terms. They become terrified of a B+. If you're terrified of a B+, you're not going to be creative and innovative, because you're never going to come up with an idea someone else might not recognize. And perhaps even more importantly, kids become so terrified of feedback that constructive feedback feels like an attack. And the truth is that when you're 20, you know, getting into a certain college is going to make a difference as to the first job you get. But what's going to make a difference in your what your second job is how you responded to constructive feedback. So we have to have a broad conversation in society between parents and schools and colleges about what success really means. And then when we have these conversations, we have to have the real experts in the room, which is going to be the kids.
And you devote some time to authentic success in the book, Ken, to that very subject.
Absolutely. That's one of the hows, talking about the tough stuff, raising a kid who's going to be creative and innovative and compassionate and who's not going to be a perfectionist, because perfectionism really, really harms kids.
And it's an important perspective, because I think these kids are up against so much pressure, especially as it relates to SAT scores and, you know, all these opportunities now to get tutoring for the SAT and to, you know, just the pressure that, hey, if you don't get a good score and get into a certain kind of college, your life is over. I mean, that's the message, I think, that many of these kids are getting, and parents as well.
Absolutely, Tracy. That is precisely the message. Your life is over. And on the other hand, if you do get really good scores, life will be handed to you on a silver platter. Mm-hmm. That's not true. Life is about long-term hard work, the ability to work with other human beings and to have constructive feedback. There is never any single test or any single moment that will determine your life. Mm-hmm. It is about having a growth mindset, about wanting to grow, loving learning, and really working well with people.
We are talking about a new book called Letting Go with Love and Confidence, talking with the authors Ken Ginsberg, who is a pediatrician at CHOP, Susan Fitzgerald, who is a former Philadelphia Inquirer writer, and what an interesting conversation about bringing up adolescence and really doing it with the right perspective in mind. We'd love to hear from you at 888-477-9499 when Radio Times returns.
Academic Urology is pleased to support WHYY. Bringing together 36 Philadelphia area urologists, Academic Urology serves patients throughout the region and at 18 area hospitals. More information online at academicurology.com.
Journalist Alyssa J. Rubin spent most of the last 10 years reporting on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. She's now the Kabul bureau chief for the New York Times. On the next Fresh Air, she talks about disturbing trends in Afghanistan, the prospects for peace in Iraq, and how September 11th changed her life. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 o'clock on WHYY-FM.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. If Texas authorities can't tell you about the fate of your home with those wildfires, maybe Facebook can. Also, at least 16 people lost twins on 9/11. We'll speak with a woman about being in that group no one wants to belong to 10 years on. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
The Oriental Rug Room at 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, featuring a large selection of hand-knotted Oriental rugs made by fairly paid adults. Their full inventory of rugs is available online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
Welcome back to Radio Times. We are talking about navigating adolescence and helping your child through some very difficult decisions. As a parent, how do you decide when they are ready for certain privileges, for certain growth steps along the way? And as we are discovering, it's not so much about age, but about your child's maturity and sort of where their head is on all these kinds of things and what parents can do to help their children have a healthy perspective on all of this. We're talking with Ken Ginsberg, who's a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine at CHOP, and Susan Fitzgerald, who is a journalist who specializes in medicine and children's health issues. And together, they have written this book, Letting Go with Love and Confidence. After all, I would say to our guests that the end aim for all of this is letting our children go and being able to do it in such a way that we feel good about the children who are leaving our home. Susan, we've been trying to unpack some of these seven C's of resilience. Character is another one of those. What would you say to parents about that?
I think character is really about expecting the very best of your child, expecting them to be kind, compassionate, concerned not just about their family and their friends, but really aware of the bigger world. And, you know, I think so often we tend to be negative about today's teens. I think today's teens are so aware of their world in a really exciting way. They're going online. They're reading about earthquakes and floods. They're volunteering. So I think character is really not an issue with our kids today. I think our kids are in very good shape with that.
And certainly it sounds like something that parents need to be modeling to set that example that of compassion about thinking about someone other than yourself, Ken.
Tracy, parents have to model all of this, whether it's compassion, whether it's character, or whether it's appropriate coping strategies. We are trying to raise our kids to be successful 35-year-olds, 45-year-olds, and 55-year-olds. We're their role models. We have to be aware that sometimes the words we say, or our actions can speak so loudly that kids don't hear the words we say. Mm-hmm. They're watching us. So absolutely. And so one of the other messages that I would love to make sure that we get out to parents is that their behavior matters more than anything else, including them taking care of themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're talking about letting go, it's a painful process. And if you feel as if your life will be over or somehow empty when your children leave the house, then your children are going to actually have anxiety about leaving, and you're going to have a conflict of interest about making those wise decisions that prepare them to leave. And when you take care of yourself, when you are preparing a rich adult life that will not include your children next door to you, you're actually showing them, it's a gift to your children, you're showing them how to be a successful 35, 45, 55-year-old.
We'll go back to the phones now to Queen Village and welcome John to our conversation. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Your guest really just hit what I think is the major point in raising a kid. Had a first family, learned from my mistakes and my lapses. Second time around, very purposeful in the way that I raised my son. I think that what we need to keep in mind is what kind of adults do we want them to be? What kind of tools do we need to give them to become successful and happy adults? If we keep that in mind as we approach the things that we do, I think that the kids will be better off. I mean, if you go back in history, didn't we do that as hunter-gatherers? Didn't we teach our children how to be successful adults in that environment? And that's what we need to do in this environment.
I think that's a brilliant point. Now, I wasn't around during the hunter-gatherer age, but I think you're right. And absolutely, we are modeling for our kids and teaching our kids how to be successful, because that's our job, is to launch them. I'd like to make one other point. We also want them to stay connected with us over a lifetime. We've talked a lot so far this hour about independence and preparing kids for independence. But you know what? I have two 16-year-olds, and I want them to be independent. I want them to navigate the world and to change it. But I also want to have a healthy interdependence. I want them to be close with us forever, not dependent on us, but close and interdependent. And what I can tell you is that this strategy of giving kids, of honoring kids' independence and preparing them for the world now during adolescence while they're pushing you away will actually make them return to you for that loving, lifelong independence that we really want. Because everybody knows, you know, 25-year-olds who won't call their mother because she's too controlling. This is the opposite of controlling. It's, I honor your expertise, I honor your ability to navigate the world on your own, and I'm going to guide you there. That's going to create a lifetime of good relationships.
Tracy, let me add here, one of the things we did purposely in the book is we ended the book with stories of parents with adult children. And those stories really so nicely reflect what Ken just said. Parents who have gone, who went through some rocky times with their kids, but now are really enjoying these adult relationships. And we thought that was a very fitting way of ending a book on letting go.
Well, I think it's such an encouragement to parents, Susan, because you can sort of get caught up in that, you know, that vortex where you feel like, you know, your children really don't like you right now. You have difficulty communicating with them, and you wonder, is it ever going to get better? And it's encouraging to see parents who have kind of passed through that point and come out on the other side with successful relationships with their children.
One of the things we discovered in doing the reporting for the book is parents, every parent out there wants to do the right thing. And there's far, far more positive things going on with our teens than bad things. So really this need to focus on how can we bring out the positives. The other theme that emerged was parents often feel very isolated in the job of parenting. So how can you build connections with other parents? So you're not the only one. Your kid will always say, well, I'm the only one who has to be in at 11. But how can you build those communities? How can you stay in touch through emails or whatever to have a sense that your kid really is surrounded by a community of parents that care about him?
Yeah, and are like-minded
exactly
in their approach. Let's go back to the phones, to the Lehigh Valley, and we will welcome Leslie to Radio Times. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, I was just wondering if the authors could comment if there's any research on these kinds of parent-child relationships for children who are homeschooled versus private school or public school.
I'm aware that there is research, but I can't actually quote it. I know that Canada just came out with a body of research that compared homeschool to other kids. I can't quote that research right now. To me, the most important variable, the thing that matters most, is probably not whether there's homeschooled or public schooled. It gets back to connection. If the connections between parents and kids are really good, whether they go to public school, private school, or homeschool, I think that the kids will thrive. But it's particularly important that kids who are homeschooled also have connections with other kids their own age, because navigating the peer environment is really, really an important part of developing your social intelligence and emotional intelligence. So I can't quote research right now, but I can tell you that if you put it in the resilience model, it's really going to be about making sure that a kid has the normal connections they need to thrive, no matter what educational setting they're in.
Well, I want to see if we can squeeze in these last three C's before we wrap up the program: contribution, coping, and control. Susan, what's contribution all about?
I think contribution ties very closely to character. Again, expecting the best out of our kids. And teenagers feel so much better when they feel that they contribute, whether it's helping an elderly neighbor, going and visiting a grandparent, doing volunteerism. Kids so often, teens today, headlines so often talk about the bad stuff teens are doing. contribution is really about creating opportunities for your kid to feel like they really make a difference.
You want them to
be
surrounded
by thank yous. Going off to another country. It can be right down the street helping a neighbor pick up the branches after the big storm.
So just being other-centered and not so self-centered, which is what we often accuse young people of being, but just cultivating that sense of other-centeredness in them.
Right. We have to stop accusing them because that's part of the problem, because kids live down to your expectations. Mm. When kids are out there contributing, what's going to happen is they're going to be surrounded by thank yous. And when kids are surrounded by thank yous rather than condemnation, they rise to be the people we want them to be.
Hmm. What about coping, Ken? I would think that would be a very important one.
Yeah, we touched on it earlier. I think it's profoundly important. You know, as an adolescent doctor, a big part of my work is making sure that kids make healthy choices. Whether you're talking about, you know, all the things we fear in adolescence, whether we're talking about eating disorders, whether we're talking about sex, whether we're talking about cutting, all of these things are ways, drugs, absolutely, cigarettes, all of these things are ways of kids coping with a life that's tough. I have developed for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and it's in this book as well, I have a coping plan that's very evidence-informed and that, you know, gives kids 10 different ways of coping so that we as parents can help kids develop a wide repertoire of positive coping strategies. If we tell kids what not to do, that's just not good enough. You can't tell kids not to do drugs if they don't know how to deal with their uncomfortable emotions. We have to tell them with just as much emphasis what to do. That's what coping's about.
And control, Susan, what is that all about?
Control really is about discipline. It's about going from moving from telling your child what not to do for them to knowing what is the right thing to do. And it really goes back to the idea of tying, you know, punishment, that's not the right word, but consequences to behavior. So if I do this, I know this is going to happen. So really getting the child to start understanding the connection between what I do matters. And control is really about knowing that you can control the outcome of most things in life.
And I want to touch on peer pressure, and I know that it's been mentioned very briefly, but that is such a huge issue for so many young people, you know, whether it's about the really serious things, you know, the drugs, the alcohol, or simply the way that they dress, where everybody wants to look like their friends. Peer pressure is real and it's powerful. And I'm just wondering, what do you recommend to parents? Obviously, these 7 steps that we talked about certainly would address that to some degree. But what can you say to parents who are doing their best at home, but then, you know, there are a lot of peers out there who are pressuring their children in various ways?
So peer pressure is usually much more subtle than actually pressure. It's not other kids usually saying do drugs or die. It's more a matter of kids wanting to fit in. But kids, and it's also about the pressure of what it feels like to be a normal kid. So a lot of peer pressure, in quotes, actually comes from advertising and TV. All right, so we have to know that. So we have to have discussions with kids at an early age. It's one of the reasons that Susan said people should begin thinking about adolescence when their kids are 8 or 9. That's when you're watching TV commercials and you're preparing them to deal with the pressure and the messages out there. But what this book does very specifically is it gives parents some really important tools to help kids navigate peer pressure. Kids want to do the right thing usually, but it's very hard when you get out in the real world to say to your friends, I'm sorry, I'm morally, ethically, and spiritually opposed to this behavior. I'm not going to do it. It's really hard.
Yeah.
But you know, one thing that's really easy to do is to say, are you kidding? My mom would kill me. You shift the blame. And we give a lot of strategies on how to do that. May I suggest one here?
Sure.
Code word. Of everything I've ever written in the last 15 years, I will tell you that this is the one I get emails from saying, thank you, you saved my child's life.
Mm.
If kids and parents have a code word where you can text it, you can, you know, slip it into conversation, the mother suddenly understands she needs to take control. So I'm 16 years old, I'm out with a bunch of friends and we're drinking. Ideally, I would say, I'm opposed to this behavior, I'm calling my mommy. But since that's not going to happen, what I can do is say, all right, you know what, guys, I'm going to stay out till 3 in the morning. I can do it easily, just watch this. I get on the phone, Mom, how's it going? Ken? Yeah? Bills? No, we're no, I can't say I'm having a good time. I'm doing trigonometry, as I wink at my friends. And then I say, but you know what? I'm not going to be able to get home, and I'm not going to get a chance to walk spotty. But when my mom hears me say, walk spotty, because that's our code, she knows she's supposed to rescue me.
Wow.
And then she puts on guns a-blazing, and she says, where are you? You know you're not allowed to stay home. You get home. Those are the. And by the way, if you can't get home, I'm going to come and pick you up. And by the way, I'll give Susan a ride home too.
Wow.
Okay, that has saved lives, and it is so simple. And kids love it because they really want to do the right thing.
Yeah, and this makes it so much easier to do that without, you know, being being a nerd, being made fun of, you know, and all of the things that they fear. But there is a way for them to do the right thing and engage their parents to be part of that with them.
And then be able to blame their parent for being the meanest person on the planet.
Right.
And most parents don't mind that. Most of us are okay with that.
It's a blessing. If it saves your kid's life, it's a blessing.
Yeah. Great piece of advice. We have just about a minute left, so I'd like to ask each of you, after all the research that you've done, the parents that you've spoken with, what would you want to leave our listeners with who are in the throes of raising these children? 15 seconds or less, each of you, key piece of advice.
I would say don't be afraid of adolescence. Adolescence is a very exciting time where you're going to get to know and love your kid more than you ever have. But what you want to do is approach adolescence from the point that you're going to honor their growing independence, guide them alongside with them, and let them know you're on their side. You do that, you're going to prevent a lot of rebellion.
Wow. Susan?
I would say two things. One, words that one of our reviewers said, there's far more right with our kids than wrong. So let's remember that even on the tough days. And second of all, talk less and listen more.
Well, great advice from both of you. We thank you so much, Ken Ginsberg, Susan Fitzgerald. They are the authors of Letting Go with Love and Confidence, Raising Responsible, Resilient, Self-Sufficient Teens in the 21st Century. Thank you both so much for being with us on Radio Times.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Tracy.
And I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moscone. Well, if you enjoyed that conversation on Letting Go with Love and Confidence, you'll want to know that Thursday, newsworks.org begins an 8-part series of excerpts from Letting Go with Love and Confidence. The excerpts will appear on